Hi, I'm Monica Hallan, and this is my podcast, Let's Talk Money. Every Friday, a new episode will drop that gives you a snapshot analysis of one money-related topic that has meaning in your life. And then I answer your money questions. My hope is to put you on the path to financial stability and freedom. So, let's talk money. I want to talk to you today about risk. When we think about investments, we think more about returns and we hardly ever think about the risk. But it's a very, very important part of the investment decision. And today I will talk about a way to measure this risk in mutual funds. The market regulator, SEBI, has mandated that there should be a risk-o-meter attached to every scheme so that the investors understand the risk of what they are buying. A riskometer indicates the risk of that particular scheme. I'll go back in history a bit, and this process began in 2013 when three colors were used to indicate risk. Blue meant that the principal was at low risk, and typically this was given to debt funds. Yellow meant that principal was at medium risk, and this was given typically to hybrid funds, hybrid between debt and equity. And brown meant that the principal was at high risk, and this was true for all equity funds. Of course, this version of the riskometer had many, many flaws. It did not consider the different risk attributes within an asset class. The three levels of risk were not descriptive enough for all the combinations of asset classes and within an asset class that are available. Various market experiences and learnings went into the new riskometer that SEBI has made mandatory from 1st Jan 2021. SEBI made four major changes. One, the number of risk categories went up from 3 to 6. These are low, low to moderate, moderate, moderately high, high and very high risk. Risk level 1 is mapped to low, and risk level 6 is mapped to very high. Overseas funds, which is mutual funds who invest in products abroad, are marked at risk level 7. This is off the charts of the risk metrics. 2, the mapping of the risk levels of the portfolios was done not on the category basis, but on the basis of the actual portfolio at the time of the new fund offer or NFO. This means that a liquid fund is not always low risk, but will be classified as low risk only if its portfolio qualifies it to be actually a low risk product. SEBI asked fund houses to use the formulas it gave to evaluate risk in debt products on metrics of liquidity, interest rate, and credit. These might be new terms for you: liquidity risk, interest rate risk, credit risk. Write in to me at mailme@monicahallan.com. If you want me to explain these terms in detail, we can go deep into this subject. Then SEBI said that equity portfolios were to be evaluated on metrics of market cap, volatility and liquidity. 3, the fund houses now have to evaluate the portfolio risk at the end of every month and upload the risk rating on the AMFI site. You can see it on amfiindia.com. 4, fund houses have to count how many times in the year the risk metric has changed. Investors and advisors now have a much better handle to check if the risk in the scheme they have is bouncing around from low to high and then decide whether to stay in the scheme or not. This is very important in debt funds since the portfolio quality can change dramatically over time. Investors should look for no changes in the riskometer, especially in the short-term debt funds categories. If this is too much jargon for you, just understand this. The riskometer is not that useful for an equity scheme, since all of them are marked high risk. It is extremely useful for debt funds, as the riskometer will map the risk on an ongoing basis of the debt fund you hold. For example, if you have a fund you invested in for a need that was 2 years away, and when you bought the fund, it was marked low risk. But 6 months later, you find that the risk category has moved to moderate risk. You now know that the risk in the fund is rising, and you might want to choose to move to another lower risk fund. this is a way for investors to make more informed decisions and not be caught by a sudden drop in the NAV or the net asset value of the bond funds due to an increased risk taken by the fund manager. The deeper you get into mutual funds as a product, the more nuances you will need to know as you continue to build your portfolios. All right, on to questions. I am answering questions about mutual funds, about portfolios, choices, options. May, what's in your bag?
So this one is from Shantanu Kundu. He says, does it make sense to invest in an index small cap fund? While I'm aware of the reasoning that index funds would be better for the large cap portion of the portfolio where generating alpha is limited, a well-chosen fund manager would be better to actively allocate than an index fund. While small cap returns have been stellar, I still want to understand. Small cap index funds have significantly lower costs than actively managed small cap funds. Wouldn't this matter over a much longer period of time?
Shantanu, that's a really good question. But what you need to know is that small cap index funds are fairly new to the market, and I don't even have a 3-year return history on them. The 1-year return looks stellar when compared to most active small cap funds, of course. So the reason to shift from an active fund to a passive fund can be evaluated both in terms of return and cost. If you identify a small cap fund that has a large outperformance that will more than compensate for the higher cost of the expense ratio, then it makes sense to go for it. But remember that fund performances change year to year, and there could be down years, and there could be years in which the fund outperforms the index. On cost, active small cap funds have an expense ratio of between 40 to 60 basis points on a direct plan. There are, of course, much more expensive funds, but most of them are underperforming, so I'm not considering them. Many of the index funds in the category too have expense ratios that are not too far away from those on the direct active funds either. If I were you, I would wait for a down market to see how the fund manager is able to navigate this active fund before I switch to a very new set of funds in the market. However, if you're not able to choose an active fund, now you have at least 10 small cap index funds to choose from. How do you choose? Choose a fund with a low expense ratio. Go for an index fund rather than an exchange traded fund or an ETF. And watch out for that tracking error. You want the fund to return the index return rather than anything which is higher or lower. And Shantanu, remember not to put all your money in small caps. An allocation of about 25% of your equity portion is good enough. These are highly volatile funds that can have years of underperformance as well. So a prudent and diversified portfolio is your friend.
The next question is from Hong Kong. This is Siddhant Pujari. He says, dear Monica, thank you for your book and your podcast episodes. My wife and I are loyal subscribers to your publications. My question is, with regards to mutual funds, how do I convert a regular commission-based plan to a direct plan with a lower expense ratio? Also, what are the advantages of a regular plan over a direct plan? As a follow-up, I have an equity mutual fund, a regular plan that I have been funding through SIP for the past 6 years. It has given me decent profits. Is it wise to switch to direct plan at this stage, as I would get less number of units now due to the increased NAV?
Siddhant from Hong Kong, thank you so much for your kind comments on my books and the podcast. It makes my day to hear from readers and listeners. And for those listeners who do not know the difference between direct and regular plans, a regular plan is one that is sold through an intermediary like a bank or a mutual fund distributor. This has a commission as part of the cost or the expense ratio. You're paying for the service of the agent through the commission that the mutual fund pays from the expense ratio. A direct plan is bought directly by you without an intermediary through a platform like MFU or directly from the fund house. And you're right, the differences in cost between regular and direct can really add up over time. For example, a difference of 50 basis points over a 10-year period might not make a big difference, but over a 20-year period, the direct plan will give you a 6% higher return. A 1 percentage point difference will make a big difference over a 20-year period, giving you 12% more. The bigger the difference between the direct and regular plan, and the longer the time horizon, the greater is the difference in returns. But this does not make regular plans useless. You should still choose regular over direct if the advisor who is selling you the regular plan is constructing, managing, and executing your portfolio. If you're using an advisor for simply buying funds that you are choosing and doing all the tax and paperwork yourself, you should move to a direct plan at once. But if the agent is doing a lot of work for you in keeping your investments on course, helping with the paperwork, tax filing, then it is absolutely fine to work with an agent on a regular plan. I understand that most banks give very poor service when it comes to selling funds. However, some of the mutual fund distributors who sell regular plans do end up giving a lot of value for the higher cost that you have incurred. So there's no blanket advice that direct is better than regular. It really depends on you. If you are able to choose and maintain your portfolio, just go direct. How to do that? Your platform or AMC will have the option to switch from a regular to direct on the transaction page. This switch will take 4 to 5 working days. And don't worry about the lesser number of units because of the higher NAV. It's a one-time cost that you have to pay in terms of just looking at a fewer number of units in your portfolio. And I'm delighted to see you taking the benefit of the Indian market as you invest in from Hong Kong.
Vinita RS from Trichy says, I keep hearing this term SWP. SIP, I understand. But what is SWP and how is it useful in my life? I'm 28 and I've just begun to earn. Do I need to use this for my investments?
So much alphabet soup, SIP, SWP, NAV. Oh my God. Okay, Vinita from Trichy. An SWP is a systematic withdrawal plan and should be seen as the reverse of an SIP or a systematic investment plan. An SIP is a way to regularly invest in a mutual fund, and an SWP is a way to regularly get a return from a mutual fund. Investors can tell the mutual fund to redeem either a certain number of units or a certain amount of money they want every month or every quarter from their mutual fund holdings, and the fund sells those many units to credit the bank account of the investor. So it's a way to get regular income from the investments that you might have made. An SWP is useful for the retired who use it to get a regular income from their capital, which is invested in mutual funds. At your age, use the SIP process to build your wealth. Your time to use the SWP is well into the future, Vinita. And that's a wrap for today. I enjoy answering your money questions. Remember, I don't look at individual portfolios. I don't recommend products. Look upon this space as a place to ask strategy questions, doubts, and just basic things that you might not understand. Each time you have a good money outcome, I feel that I have won. To make sure that you don't miss an episode, press follow and help your friends get money smart by sharing a link with them. You can reach out to me at mailme@monicahullin.com. That's Monica with a K. Tag my social media handles @MonicaHullin. And finally, remember that you should have money and money should not have you. So let's talk money again soon. Bye.
Let's Talk Money is hosted by Monica Hullin. This is a Made in India production. Creative Director, May Mariam Thomas. Project Manager, Sean Phantom. Head of Audio Production, Karthik Kulkarni. Producer, Meghna Gulati. Sound Editor, Lakshman Parasuram. Artwork Design by Alika Gupta.